So we'll start, as usual, with meditating on the Buddha, reciting the verses, because they will steer our minds in a positive direction. And then we'll go on from there to the teaching, which will be about karma. Okay, so let's start with calming our mind, coming back to our breath for a minute, letting the mind relax. And then in the space in front, visualize the Buddha sitting on a throne and lotus and flat discs of the moon and sun. The lotus, moon, and sun representing the three principal aspects of the path. The Buddha's body is made of light, and he's looking at you with delight. And around him are all your direct teachers, the lineage teachers, all the meditation deities, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Arhats, Dakas, Dakinis, and transcendent Dharma protectors. So we're sitting in the presence of a huge gathering of holy beings who are all intent, because they have bodhicitta, intent on guiding us to full awakening, guiding us out of cyclic existence. And we're surrounded by all sentient beings. As far as the eye can see, because we exist in relation to all these sentient beings. And as we do the recitations, we think that we're leading all the other sentient beings in developing these same thoughts. And so you can include in your visualization the vast sentient beings, but also specific people who maybe are having difficulties, or people you don't like, or you know, you can also personalize your visualization. I take refuge
until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient.
May all sentient
beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity free of bias, attachment, and anger.
Reverently,
I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends, and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the great awakening.
This ground
anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, imagined as a Buddha land and offered to you, may all beings enjoy this pure land.
The objects of
attachment, aversion, and ignorance, friends, enemies, and strangers, my body, wealth, and enjoyments, I offer these without any sense of loss. Please accept them with pleasure, and inspire me and others to be free from the three poisonous attitudes.
Idam
Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniryatayami.
Then imagine that a duplicate of the Buddha comes from the Buddha in front, comes and sits on top of the crown of your head, facing the same direction as you. And that Buddha helps you petition and make requests to the merit field in front so that they will inspire us in our practice.
Glorious and precious Rit Guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness. Bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. The eyes through whom the vast scriptures are seen, supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request.
And then think that there's a Buddha on the crown of the heads of all the sentient beings around you. And as we recite the Buddha's mantra, that light comes from all these Buddhas into us, into all the sentient beings, purifying our resistance and our negativities, and bringing with it inspiration and the realizations of the path. Ayata
Mani Mani Mahamani Soha Tayata Mani Mani Mahamani Soha Tayata Mani Mani Mahamani Soha Tayata
scriptures say that, one, from a cause that is the practice of virtue, only the result of happiness can occur, not one of suffering. And from a cause that is non-virtuous, only a suffering result can arise, not one of happiness. 2. Although one may perform only minor virtue or negativity, when either fails to encounter an obstacle, it gives rise to a result of great magnitude. And 3. If you perform neither virtue nor negativity, you will experience neither happiness nor suffering. So if you don't create the cause, the result won't come about. And then 4, if the virtue or negativity performed encounters no obstacle, the action performed will not go wasted. It is certain to produce either happiness or misery. Furthermore, depending on the recipient of the action, the support, the object, and the attitude, a karmic action will be more or less powerful. So having generated faith based on conviction in the functioning of actions and their effects, may we strive to do good, starting with minor virtues, the 10 virtues, and so on. And may our 3 doors of action, our body, speech, and mind, not be sullied by even the slightest non-virtue, such as the 10 non-virtues. So Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so. Make that request in your heart. Really be able to understand and live according to the law of karma and its effects. In response to requesting the Guru Buddha, 5 colored light and nectar stream from all parts of his body into you through the crown of your head. The light and nectar absorb into your mind and your body and to those of all the sentient beings around you. And think that it purifies all negativities and obscurations accumulated since beginningless time. And think especially it heals all illness, interferences, negativities, and banishes all obscurations that interfere with generating convictional faith in the law of karma and its effects, especially the importance of creating, engaging in virtuous deeds and abstaining from non-virtuous ones. So your body becomes translucent, the nature of light, and think all your good qualities, your lifespan, merit, and so forth, expand and increase. And think in particular that having cultivated a convictional faith in the law of karma and its effects, a superior realization of abstaining from negativities and engaging in the correct practice of virtue has arisen in your mind stream and the mind stream of others. I really feel like you have that understanding and the ability to live according to it. Although you may strive in this manner, if due to the feebleness of your antidotes and the strength of your afflictions, you are sullied by non-virtue, do your utmost to purify this by means of the four opponent powers and abstain from it henceforth. I have a strong determination to do that. Going to continue. Last week we started talking about the 10 pathways of non-virtue, okay? And we did the 7 of body and speech. So we talked about killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, the 3 of body, and then lying, divisive speech, harsh words, and idle talk, which are the verbal ones. And we went through that to be a complete action that has the power to bring a rebirth, then it has to have all 4 parts of that action complete. Okay? So the object, the intention, the action itself, and the conclusion of the action. Okay, if something is missing any of those parts, then the action may not result in a rebirth, but it can still have other results, like what happens to us in the different rebirths. Okay, so the one, we're going to do the 3 mental ones, start with those today. So coveting, malice, and wrong views. Okay, so mental karma is the mental factor of intention that occurs simultaneously with, you know, the mental factors of coveting, of malice, and of distorted views. Okay, so remember that the mental factor of intention is one of the 5 omnipresent mental factors, and that other mental factors can also be present in any kind of mental state. So, you know, if you have the intention plus coveting, then it becomes this mental action of coveting. If you have the intention plus malice, it becomes this mental action of malice. Okay? So, for coveting, the object, the first of the 4 parts of it, is an external possession, which may be movable or not, or an internal quality that belongs to another person. Okay, so we can covet either some physical thing that somebody has or some kind of mental quality. The worst, actually, is desiring the offerings made to holy beings and to the Sangha. So we need to be careful, okay? And then the second part, the intention, that has 3 subsections. So we have to recognize the object as being that thing, wish and hope to possess it, okay? And, you know, and then it's with the mental factor of coveting. Yeah, so pretty much attachment, okay? So here, we don't have to say anything, we don't have to do anything, but rather inside of the mind, we're developing an intention. Only this were mine. Okay, I will make it mine. Yeah, I think I'm going to do something so I can get it. Okay, so, you know, this is the kind of mental state that is going to precede, let's say, the physical action of stealing. Yeah? Or it may actually Let's see. Yeah, you know, it's something where we're going to try and make something ours. Yeah, we have it all the time. Our society encourages us to have this mental state of coveting because it's good for the economy. Yeah? So you should covet as much as possible. Buy as many useless things that you don't need. You know, use more than your share of the world's resources. And be a good American citizen by doing that. Okay? So, yeah? And then the action of coveting is planning again and again how we're going to get this thing. You know? So, it could be property in your own family, other people's property. It could even be things that aren't owned by anybody. And you're sitting there, may it be mine, I want it to be mine. What can I do to get this to be mine? So this could be also the mental state that lies behind hinting. You know, when we talk about the five wrong livelihoods that the Sangha can engage in to get material things. Yeah, one is hinting. Yeah. Oh, you know, that dried fruit or that fresh fruit that you offered to the Abbey last time was so delicious. Thank you so much. Hint, hint, hint. Give us some more. Okay? So it's the mental state that's going to motivate that kind of verbal action. Yeah? It's the mental state that can motivate flattery. Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, you're one of the best Dharma practitioners that's ever come here. You know? You're really a very special person to the Abbey. Hint, 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 hint. You know, or flatter, I'm sorry, flatter. But it's, you know, getting them to give something. Or it could be the mental state behind giving a small gift to get a big one. Yeah, here you go. And I'm giving you my packs of tissues because I care so much about you. You know, you're going to give me something back, aren't you? Worth more than a package of tissues. Yeah, people do this at Christmas too. Yeah, give somebody a gift, and then that other person feels obliged to give you something too. So, you know, this thing of making people obliged also, you know, can come from coveting. And certainly hypocrisy comes from coveting. Yeah. We act one way when the benefactors are around, and we act another way when they aren't around. When they're around, we are pious and sweet and holy. And then when they leave, all hell breaks loose. You know. Okay. So coveting, it can be, it's very dangerous because you can see all the different kind of actions that it can precede. Yeah. So although it's a mental action and it's not as bad as expressing it verbally or physically, still, it's what motivates those other things, okay? And then the conclusion of this action of mental action of coveting is you abandon all your sense of integrity, all sense of embarrassment in front of others, and you make the decision of I'm going to do what I can to get it. Okay, so it's coveting, you know, this mental action isn't just wishing to possess something, but it's really thinking about how to make it ours and deciding to try and get it. Okay, do you ever do any of that? Okay, then malice is the second mental one. So the object is sentient beings. I guess, you know, your object could be your computer if it breaks down. Yeah, or your car when it breaks down. It doesn't say that here, just the sentient beings. Okay, then the second part of an intention, you recognize that sentient being as someone who could be hurt if you harm them. You have the wish to harm, you want to take revenge because that person has hurt you or they've hurt people you're attached to. Okay. And you have that, you know, it's going to be anger principally here that's going to want to inflict harm on somebody else. Yeah. And, yeah, so it's the intention to inflict harm and the decision to, you know, do it. It's like, I am so fed up with what this person is doing that out of compassion for their well-being, I'm going to punch them in the nose so that they'll learn not to behave this way to somebody else. Or, you know, if you don't want to be so gross and punch them in the nose, you speak badly about them behind their back and turn everybody in the workplace against them. Okay, we don't do nasty things like that, do we? Yeah. But we know other people who do. We hope those other people are listening to this teaching so that they can abandon all their malice, especially the unjust, unfair malice that they have for us, those idiots. But we're very forgiving and benevolent towards them. Right? Okay. Then the action of malice is putting more effort into it. And the conclusion is deciding to harm somebody. You know? Get even, teach them a lesson, put them in their place, yeah, whatever. So this is going to, you know, be the motivation that is behind stealing. It could be the motivation actually behind any of the seven verbal and physical ones. Yeah, we can do any of those with anger. Okay. Then, wrong view. Okay. So here, the object of wrong view is something that is true, that exists. For example, the law of karma and its effects. Yeah. And, okay. So or the existence of the three jewels or something like that. Or it could also be, something that isn't true that you're asserting is true. So either something that exists that you assert is non-existent, or something that is non-existent that you assert is existent. And here it's applying to views that have to do with spiritual practice. It's not talking about political views. Even though my political views are right. So everybody should vote yes on 594 to stop the loopholes for getting guns in Washington State. Yeah. Normally I don't say that, but I was reading an article that now some churches and all, or somebody's saying that churches should give guidance about how to vote. Which I don't think personally is correct, but I'm not saying that as part of the church.
What church you were in?
I'm not part of a church. I'm just a citizen who doesn't like to see other people get hurt. Okay? Okay, so wrong views like this is stubbornly repudiating or denying something. So, for example, it could deny a cause, like saying there's no such thing as virtuous and non-virtuous actions. Or we deny an effect, for example, saying that our actions have no effects. You know, there's no ethical dimension to our actions, so we can do what we want. Yeah. Or we deny a functioning thing. So, for example, we deny the existence of past and future lives. Yeah. Or we say things happen without causes. Or we deny an existent phenomena. For example, saying there's no such thing as enlightened beings. Yeah, that's all just a bunch of nonsense made up. Okay. So that's the object. Then the intention. You know clearly what you disbelieve. You intend to deny it. Okay. And, but you don't necessarily, when you're doing wrong views, you don't necessarily know that the view is wrong. Yeah. In other words, you think the view is right, you know, because the ignorance, the mental factor of ignorance is so strong here. So you are determined to support that view, thinking that it's something very good. The action is thinking this wrong view again and again, and just this is my philosophy, this is what I believe, and then deciding that your view is absolutely correct. Okay, so it's not doubt over a view, or it's not just I'm not sure what I believe, but it's like my view is correct. And this is it, and I'm going to act accordingly. And so that is really, really dangerous, these kind of wrong views, because they become the basis for doing whatever non-virtuous action we want to, because we think, for example, that cause and effect don't, or karma and its effects don't exist. There's no ethical dimension to my action, so I can do whatever I want. As long as I don't get caught, there's no problem with it. Yeah? I can criticize Buddha, Dharma, Sangha all I want because they don't exist. Yeah? So there's some kind of like really entrenched, stubborn, wrong view there that is very, very, although it's just a mental action, it's considered the worst of all of the 10 non-virtues, because under its influence we'll do the other 9, thinking that it's okay to do them, not even realizing that they're negative actions. So that becomes really, really dangerous, because then you get people doing all sorts of horrible actions thinking that they're creating virtue. Yeah. Like killing others, and I bring up what's happening now and also in the Crusades, killing others, being a martyr, will get you closer to God. That's, total wrong view. But it gives you permission to do who knows what. Okay? Okay, so that's the 10 non-virtuous pathways. Remember that we also have 10 virtuous pathways. Okay? And so, actually, we have 2 sets of 10 virtuous ones. So one set is just abandoning the negative ones. Yeah, you have the opportunity to do them, but you don't. And so this is the one that that relates to when you take precepts and keep precepts. Because you've made that intention not to do those non-virtuous actions. So every moment you're not doing it, any of them, or whichever ones you've taken the precepts about, then you are accumulating good karma of abstaining from non-virtue. So even you're sleeping, even you're just sitting there, you're creating good karma because you have the intention not to do those actions and you are actively not doing them. Yeah. So this is the importance of taking precepts and why precepts help us purify and accumulate good karma. Okay? And then also, that's one set of the 10 virtuous pathways, just not doing, deliberately, consciously not doing the other ones. Then another set is doing the opposite. So instead of killing, protecting life, instead of stealing, protecting others' property, instead of unwise and unkind sexual behavior, using sexuality wisely and kindly, or being better yet as being celibate, yeah. Instead of lying, telling the truth, instead of using our speech to create disharmony among people, using our speech to bring people together and, you know, repair divisions or prevent them from quarreling. Then also the opposite of harsh words, like speaking kindly and encouraging ways to people. The opposite of idle talk, you know, really speaking at appropriate times and appropriate amounts about appropriate topics and not just blah, blah all over the place. Instead of coveting, generosity, you know, thinking of how to give. Instead of malice, kindness, thinking of how to help. Instead of wrong views, you know, cultivating right views. So you can see, you know, when you're doing the Lamrim meditation, you're really involved in cultivating right views. You're doing the opposite of this non-virtue of wrong views, because you're cultivating right ones. Okay, when you're practicing generosity, you're doing the opposite of coveting. Okay? Okay, so that's the ten non-virtuous pathways and the 10 virtuous pathways. Now, we're going to talk about the results of karma. Okay? Remember, karma means action. Yeah, so karma isn't some airy-fairy kind of thing. It's just actions and their results. Yeah. His Holiness sometimes teases people and he says, now, you know, now so many people don't really know what karma means. It's just, you know, something happens and we say, well, that's their karma. Don't we, you know? Something, oh, that's my karma. That's their karma. He says, that means I don't know. Why did that happen? That's their karma. I don't know. Yeah? So if we think like that, it becomes almost meaningless, you know. But what it does mean is that for whatever happiness or suffering we experience, we created the causes for it. Okay? So there's two questions that somebody sent in here regarding this before I go on to the results. So somebody is asking about actions where you don't have an intention to do something. So if the karma is still accrued. So the example is that this person is taking medication that makes it difficult for them to stay focused. So they're wondering if their inability to stay focused under the influence of this medication is due to past karma, you know, or if it's some habit that's being enhanced by past karma, or that the medication is enhancing, you know, some past habit that they had that the medication is enhancing. And they're also wondering if it could ripen as a continued habit to be spaced out, or even ripen in an animal realm. Okay? If you are, you know, ill and you're taking medicine and the medicine makes you spaced out, the cause of being spaced out is the medicine. Okay? If you know, you feel that it's a disadvantage to be spaced out, then, you know, you could think, oh, this is a ripening of some negative karma that maybe I created in the past. You know, let's say stepping over Dharma books or something. But basically, it's still caused by the medicine. Yeah? Even if one or two people don't have that reaction to the medicine, if your doctor says this is caused by the medicine, I think you can pretty well believe that, okay? You can still think, oh, this is, you know, like an obstacle to my Dharma practice, so I want to purify whatever causes I may have created to have obstacles like this in my Dharma practice. Yeah. But you're certainly not creating the karma for an animal rebirth unless you really start liking taking the medicine because it makes you spaced out. Okay. But if, you know, this is just a biological thing that's happening with your body, it's really not, karma is not so, involved so much, you know. Unless, like I said, you start really, you know, you're taking oxycodone and codeine, and it's like you're taking it for pain, and then you start going, oh, that's pretty good stuff. I wonder how I can get my doctor to give me more prescriptions, even though I don't need it. That is non-virtue that's going to be creating karma, maybe for an animal rebirth. But if you're just taking the medicine for whatever purpose that your doctor prescribed it to help you feel better, don't worry about creating non-virtue. Okay? Then the second question was at the end of the Vajrasattva practice, it says all your negativities have been completely purified. So does that really mean that they've all been completely purified? Or does that mean that their ability to expand, you know, the second quality of karma, that a small action can be being a big one, that is purified or what? You know, what is it? What does that mean? Okay? So actually, when Vajrasattva says all your negativities have been completely purified, that is part of a skillful way for us to think when we're doing purification practice. It doesn't mean that all of our karmas are completely purified, because if they were, we would be Buddha. Okay? But it's very helpful for us to think they've all been purified, because in that way we put things down and we stop tormenting ourselves. Yeah? Because as we all know, when we've done something, you know, something non-virtuous, we have the tendency of, oh, I'm so bad, I'm so guilty, oh, this is awful, this is never going to get purified, woe is me. And that mentality itself prevents us from purifying the karma, because we can't let go. Repeat! I want you all to repeat that so you remember it.
The mentality itself that makes it so you can't let go of the karma, that you don't purify.
Yeah. Okay. So don't think that mentally torturing yourself and thinking the more guilty I feel, the more I'm purifying. Don't think that is right. That is not right. Okay? I mean, the whole thing here is you really think it's gone. And in that way, you put it down. And you have a strong, you know, determination not to do that again. Okay? So you have strong regret, strong determination not to do it again. You've created a different kind of attitude towards whoever you harm by taking refuge in the holy beings, generating bodhicitta regarding the sentient beings. Yeah? So you're going up and forward in a good direction now. So you think it's all been purified, even though it hasn't, because that way of thinking helps you get on with your life. Okay? Next time you do Vajrasattva or 35 Buddhas or whatever, you can still purify the same thing. In fact, it's good to. Yeah? Because we need to keep reminding ourselves, oh, I've purified, put it down. Okay? And that keeps building up the intention not to do it again. Okay? Now we'll go on to the results of karma. Okay. So We usually talk about three results of karma. One of them has two parts to it, so sometimes it talks about four. Okay, but the three results are, first of all, the ripening result, okay, the causally concordant result. The old translation for that was result similar to the cause, but causally concordant result. And the third is the environmental result. Okay. The maturation result, which is also translated as the ripening result, okay, or sometimes fruitional result. So there's four factors that are required for something to be that kind of result. One is it is neither virtuous nor non-virtuous. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Its cause is either virtuous or non-virtuous, so not a neutral action. Okay. The result is connected with the continuum of sentient beings as the second quality. The third is the result comes after the cause. I don't know how it couldn't. And fourth is the result itself is neutral. The result is not virtuous or non-virtuous. Okay? So this came up last night, yeah, when we were talking about it. Okay? So an example of a ripening result or a maturation result are the our body and mind that we take when we have a rebirth. Okay? So that's, it's something, the cause is either virtuous or non-virtuous, the result's connected with the continuum of sentient beings, the result's coming after the cause, and that result, the body and mind, is neither virtuous nor non-virtuous. Okay? So, you know, the ripening result is basically the body, that body and mind that you take, the realm that you're reborn into. Okay? Then the causally concordant result, the second kind of result, there's two, it has two kinds, okay? First is the causally concordant experiential result. And that means that we will experience something similar to what we caused others to experience. Okay? So if we if we lie to somebody, there's the tendency for other people to lie to us. Then there's the causally concordant behavioral result, and that's the tendency to behave in the same way again and again, to do that action again and again. Okay? So somebody, with respect to lying, the tendency to lie again. So this is actually the most dangerous result. This causally concordant behavior result, because through it you create more and more and more non-virtue, or more and more virtue, depending upon what the action is, because these three results function for both virtuous and non-virtuous karma. And then environmental result is the environment we live in, okay? So let's talk about specific things, yeah? So we'll go through this in terms of the 10 non-virtues, and then the opposite will be the 10 virtues. You can think about those on your own. Okay, so the in general, in terms of the ripening result, okay, a major negative action usually brings rebirth as a hell being. So something that you've done with a strong intention, with a lot of effort, one of the actions that by nature is, you know, more powerful than the others, I'll talk about that in a minute, that brings rebirth as a hell being. A middle, strength one is as a hungry ghost, and a minor one is as an animal. Okay, so within the three physical actions, the strongest one by the nature of the action, what do you think is
killing.
Killing. and the next one stealing, and then the least is unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Of the four non-virtues, which is the most damaging?
Lying.
Okay, then divisive speech, then harsh speech, and the least one is idle talk. Among the three mental ones,
wrong views,
then malice, and then coveting. Okay, so the opposite direction there. Okay, so I won't go through the ripening result for each of those because, you know, I just explained it very generally there. And I also won't go through the causally concordant behavioral result because for all of them, it's the tendency to do the action again. Okay, so we'll just go through the causally concordant experiential result and the environmental result because here's where the differences lie. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody? Okay. So for killing, the causally concordant experiential result is you have a short life or poor health. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, doesn't it? You know, if we hurt others physically, then it ripens in terms of our body being weak or a short life or something like that. The environmental result of killing is to live in a place where there's a lot of war and strife, okay, where there's no peace. This makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Where the food and the drink and the medicine, you know, what you use to keep your body alive, is not very potent. So the food in the place is not nourishing. The medicine is like old and it doesn't work very well. So that's part of the environmental result of killing. So can you see some kind of how these results would be related to killing? Yeah? Okay, then with stealing, the causally concordant experiential result is poverty. Yeah, because we stole, we deprived others of their things. So as a result, we experience poverty. Our things are stolen, or we don't have the power to use them. We have things, but we can't access them and use them. Okay? Like having a trust that you have no control over. Okay? So that's the result of stealing. Yeah? Interfering with other people's wealth. Yeah? And so this also goes in the positive one. This is why generosity is the cause of wealth. Yeah, it's the causally concordant, experiential result of, you know, you experience wealth when you've been generous. Then the environmental result of stealing is you live in a place that is very dangerous. There's poverty. Yeah, you stole. You live in a place that's poor. Okay, there's droughts. There's floods. There's poor harvests. And there's many natural disasters. So an environment that really brings about poverty and the natural disasters destroy your crops, the seeds don't, you know, grow well, the soil isn't fertile, there's not enough rain. So, you know, it ripens in terms of the environment. So it makes some sense, huh?
Your house gets destroyed by tornadoes, all your possessions are gone.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a tornado comes by, a flood comes by, whatever. Okay. Fire, yeah. Okay, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, causally concordant experiential result, is you will have a disagreeable or unfaithful spouse and marital disharmony. You don't even have to wait for the next life for this one to ripen. It happens in this life, doesn't it? Yeah? You're unfaithful, then marital disharmony? Yeah? Then, you know, your partner goes off with somebody else, they're fed up? Yeah? Or they're mad at you, and, you know, you don't have a very nice marriage. So it happens this life and future lives. Okay? then the environmental place, the environmental result is you live in a dirty place with poor sanitation and a lot of misery. Yeah? Okay, lying, causally concordant, experiential result is other people will lie to you, people will slander you, you'll be deceived by others. Okay, so other people deceiving you, lying you, slandering you, saying false things about you. Also, other people won't believe you or trust you. Yeah, sometimes we wonder, you know, why doesn't somebody believe me? Yeah, have you ever noticed that there's some people and you don't know what it is about them, but you don't believe them and other people don't believe them either? And that person may be telling the truth, but somehow people just don't trust that person. Yeah, it's a result of lying in a previous life, okay? Or another one of these results is other people accuse us of lying even when we're telling the truth. Yeah, so we've seen that kind of thing happen too. Yeah, you get accused of doing something that you haven't done, you try and explain, nobody believes you. The environmental result is you live in a place with a foul odor, yeah, where people are deceitful, there's much fear, and there's a lot of corruption in society. Mm-hmm. Makes sense, doesn't it? You lie, so you're born in a place where everybody lies, where there's so much corruption in business, in government, in whatever. Okay, the people around you are all deceitful. Everybody's trying to just look out for their own selves. Okay, then divisive speech, creating disharmony with our speech, causally concordant experiential results. Guess what? It happens in this life too. People don't like to be with us. We don't have any friends. Okay? We're separated from spiritual masters and Dharma friends. And we also have a bad reputation. Yeah? So if we use our speech to create disharmony, guess what happens to us? You know? People find out about it. This life, even. They don't like us. We don't have friends. They don't want to be with us because we're always trashing somebody. We're separated from spiritual mentors and Dharma friends, again, because we just create so much disharmony with others that we can't have good relationships even with the people who are important to us. And we have a bad reputation because with our divisive speech, we've made other people have bad reputations. Okay? The environment? You're living in a rocky, uneven place. Yeah? Disharmonious speech is rocky and uneven. Okay? Rocky, uneven place where travel is difficult and dangerous, and there's a lot of uneven land with many cliffs. Okay? Kind of makes sense. Travel is dangerous. Uneven land, cliffs, rocky, just like the result of our speech. Harsh words, concordant experiential result, guess what? We're going to be insulted, blamed, and criticized, ridiculed, made fun of, exactly what we did to somebody else. So, whenever somebody blames us, whenever somebody criticizes us, our practice is to say, I created the cause. Yeah? Why is this person criticizing me? I may have made the mistake, I may not have made a mistake, but I created the cause to be criticized through having harsh speech at a previous time. Okay? So people criticize us, and and we have to hear harsh speech even when we have good intentions. Yeah, and also others misunderstand us very easily. Yeah. You know, so sometimes other people misunderstand us and we feel so frustrated. Well, it's a result of harsh speech. Yeah? Okay. The environment. Barren. Okay. A barren, dry place that is inhabited by uncooperative people. Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? It's a place with thorns, sharp stones, scorpions, and dangerous animals. You know, a physical manifestation of harsh speech, isn't it? Yeah? Barren, dry, inhabited by uncooperative people. Thorns, sharp stones, scorpions, dangerous animals. Okay, idle talk. The causally concordant experiential result is other people will not listen to or value our words. And others will laugh at us. And again, this happens in this life too, doesn't it? Oh, there's come so-and-so who's always chattering about blah, blah, that has no importance. I think I'm really busy, you know, I can't stop and talk to them. Yeah, I mean, people don't want to listen to us. They avoid us. They laugh at us. The environmental result is a drab place with an unbalanced climate where fruit does not ripen at the proper time, wells go dry, flowers and trees don't blossom. Okay? So. Then coveting. Experiential result. We have intense desires and craving. Yeah? Our ventures fail. We can't complete projects or fulfill our wishes and hopes. Yeah, it's the result of coveting. And, you know, it's good, you know, when you're thinking about these, to think of people you know, including yourself, when we have experienced these kinds of things. Because these kind of results don't have to be throughout your whole lifetime, but they may happen at one part or another of your life. And or somebody else's life and say, oh, this is, you know, the karmic cause of that. Yeah, so we meet people with intense desires and craving, result of coveting. Makes sense, doesn't it? Their ventures fail, they can't complete projects, their wishes and hopes are unfulfilled. Because craving, wanting. Yeah? Okay, the environmental result, small crops. Okay, our property, belongings, and the environment constantly deteriorate, and we live in an isolated and poor place. Okay, malice. Experiential result is we have great hatred, fear, suspicion, guilt, paranoia, and we get scared for no obvious reason. Yeah? Yeah. See, sometimes we know people that have a preponderance of these kind of mental states. Sometimes we experience them, you know, just for a short time in our life, but some people, you know, really, quite often, yeah, great hatred, fear, suspicion, guilt, paranoia, and a lot of fear, even though there's no reason for the fear. Yeah, very easily frightened. So that goes with malice. You know, the mind is so busy planning how to harm others that, of course, we think others are planning to harm us too. Environmental results, a place with epidemics, disputes, dangerous animals, poisonous snakes. You're caught in the middle of wars and calamities, and the food is very unpleasant. Okay. Then wrong views. Yeah, experiential result, deeply ignorant. Mind is very dull. It's hard to understand the Dharma, and it takes a long time to gain realizations. Okay. So somebody might be very intelligent in a worldly way. Yeah, PhDs, high IQs, but because of holding many wrong views in previous lives, from a Dharma viewpoint, they can't understand the Dharma, their mind gets dull, takes a long time to gain realizations, and they aren't even interested. Okay, then the environmental result of wrong views, few crops, lack of a home and any kind of protector. Natural resources are exhausted. Think of what's happening to the world now. Natural resources are exhausted. Springs go dry. The environment is polluted. And society is chaotic. It's a result of wrong views. Makes sense, huh? Okay. So there's a nice quotation in Precious Garland by Nagarjuna. I'll read to you. He talks about this. He says, a short life comes through killing, much suffering through harming. So physically harming others, then we wind up with a lot of suffering. Poor resources through stealing, enemies through adultery. From lying arises slander, from divisiveness, a parting of friends, from harshness, harsh speech, hearing the unpleasant, and from senselessness, senseless chatter, one's speech is not respected. Coveting destroys one's wishes, harmful intent yields fright, wrong views lead again to bad views, and intoxicants lead to mental confusion. Through not giving comes poverty, through wrong livelihood, deception, through arrogance, a bad family, through jealousy, little beauty. An unattractive complexion comes from anger, stupidity from not questioning the wise. These are effects for human, but prior to all is a bad migration. Okay. Opposite to the well-known fruits of these non-virtues is the arising of effects caused by all the virtues. So again, we should not just think about this in terms of non-virtue, but also in terms of virtue. Okay. Then... okay, I can't teach everything about karma because it's, otherwise we just, first of all, they don't know it, second of all, it just gets too long. Okay, so we can talk sometimes about propelling and completing karma, okay? Propelling karma is the karma that... will propel us into a rebirth that will ripen in the maturation result of a body and mind of another living being in the future. So it's the karma that propels a rebirth. And then completing karma, so the propelling karma usually has all four parts of it intact. The completing karma usually doesn't. I say usually and generally because these aren't hard and fast rules. Completing karma means the conditions and the experiences that you have once you take that rebirth, okay? So, if I can take dear beloved Princess Mahakaruna, for example, okay? Princess Mahakaruna. Thank you. Is, yeah, attained, you know, got that rebirth through a non-virtuous propelling karma because it's a lower rebirth. It's an unfortunate realm, okay? So she got that through some kind of non-virtuous action. However, she lives in luxury. Yeah, how else did she get the name Princess Mahakaruna? You know, I mean, look at that blanket she's lying on. I don't even have a blanket that nice. None of us at this abbey have a blanket that nice. The, downstairs in her condo, she has the nicest, softest blanket. This one, the nicest blanket. You know, better than what we have. No renunciation. Maybe rather I should say spoiled rotten. Okay. So her completing karma is fantastic. You know, she lives in an abbey. She lives with nice people. She has enough food. She has more than enough food. Yeah, she has people who put up with her antics and nice, comfortable places to, you know, sit and listen to the Dharma teachings and take a bath at the same time. Okay? So very good completing karma, lousy propelling karma. Okay? On the other hand, you could say somebody who is a human being living in abject poverty has good propelling karma because they have a human birth that comes from keeping ethical conduct, but very bad completing karma because they live in poverty. Okay, or perhaps there's a broken home or something like that. Or in a, they live in a place with a lot of warfare. So the completing karma was from non-virtuous, you know, non-virtuous. Okay? So there's that way of talking about karma, propelling and completing. We can also talk about individual and collective karma. Okay? So individual karma is what we create as an individual. You know, and what we've been talking about so far mostly is individual karma. However, collective karma is when we do those actions together with a number of people. Okay? So, war is a great example of the collective karma of killing. Yeah? Because everybody's there wanting to kill. You know, enacting killing and rejoicing at the killing that's going on. So they're accumulating each other's negative karma. Okay? Or, you know, a group of people doing, forming a charity organization. Yeah? That would be an example of collective karma, you know, where the people are all creating the action of being of benefit. So, for example, many of us have been to the meetings of youth emergency services, you know, our local group where we're trying to help the homeless teens. Yeah, so we do this as a group. We do it together with the other people in the community. So we're creating very virtuous collective karma together. Yeah. So collective karma will ripen in our finding ourselves in specific groups of people, okay? Because the karma was created together as a result, so the group experiences the result together, okay? So, for example, you know, if there's a plane crash, all those people dying together, that's the result of some kind of collective karma that they created together. Okay, or you know, a number of people winning awards together could be the result of a collective karma that they got through doing a certain action, you know, working together as a team to achieve something. Okay, so it's very important for us to be aware of what groups we're joining and why we're joining those groups. Okay. Because if we're a member of a group and we agree with the purpose for which that group was formed, then we, every time somebody in the group does one of those actions, that is the purpose for which the group is formed, then we accumulate some karma, even though we aren't the one who did it. Because we're part of that group, we joined it for a reason, for that purpose, and we're obviously rejoicing at what the other people in the group did. Okay? So, for example, you know, an army is a very good example. Yeah? And a monastery is another good example. Yeah? When you practice Dharma together with others, we rejoice at each other's virtue, we, you know, create that good karma together, we can experience the good result together. That's why they always say, you know, that it's good to practice together with groups because our virtue becomes stronger. And the analogy they give is, you know, if you go to sweep something, you can't sweep with just one thread. You don't accomplish very much with one, you know, thing. But if you have a whole broom made of many, what do you call them?
Strands.
Strands, yeah, straws, whatever it is, then you can sweep a whole floor. Okay? So, you know, it's really nice when we do pujas together, we meditate together, we all came here for the purpose of, you know, doing virtuous actions. So we rejoice in each other's good karma and good actions, and, you know, it enhances our own karma. But it also creates the karma for us to be together in the future in a happy situation. Hopefully, if we dedicate it to be together in a Dharma situation, it will ripen in that way. Yeah. Whereas, you know, if you're part of a gang of some sort, or part of an army, or you're part of a corporation where a lot of people know each other and are doing shady business deals together, you know, knowingly, with everybody else's consent and help, then you're creating that collective karma, and chances are, you know, we'll experience the result together. The result of that kind of thing would clearly be poverty. Yeah, seemed to me. Okay? So, then the question comes up. Okay, what about, like, we live in Washington State. Yeah? So we're part of the group of citizens of Washington State. Washington State has the capital punishment. Does that mean that every time somebody is executed in Washington, that we accumulate the karma of killing? We do not agree with that action, you know, and we did not come to live in Washington State because they have the capital punishment. And in fact, we do whatever we can to speak against capital punishment. So when somebody is, you know, the government kills somebody, we don't accumulate the karma of killing, even though we're citizens of that state. Okay, so you have to have an agreement for which the group was formed. And if you don't agree with, you know, like you're part of an army and they tell you to do something that you think is really, really unwise, yeah, then you don't accumulate that karma because you're not endorsing the motivation for which it's done. Okay? Then, what else can I tell you about karma?
About the strength.
Huh?
The strength or the...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, so let's... There's too much here to go through. Let's go back to the strength. Okay. Come on. Come on. You're supposed to do something. Okay. So, the strength of karma. Because it, the visualization, we had the four things, you know. Actually, I have different translations for those four, which I think are better translations. Okay? So one is the recipient. Okay? So this is how you determine the strength or of, you know, the power of a karma, who the action is done to. So if you do an action in relationship to the three jewels or to your spiritual mentor, it's going to be stronger. Okay? So if you lie to your spiritual mentor, that's stronger than lying to the cat. Okay? Yeah? So it's, or you lie to the three jewels, you know, you conceal an offense, but you say you're not concealing it. Okay, so that's heavier. On the other hand, you make offerings, you create more virtue. Yeah. So this is true both regarding the Buddha Dharma Sangha, let's say when we make offerings on the altar, and regarding our spiritual mentors. So that's why they say that, you know, this is the field of merit, because through them, through doing virtuous actions, the power of the virtue is much stronger. The reason for that is because these are beings who are helping us along the Dharma path, which is an extraordinary kindness to us. Okay, our parents are also strong recipients, you know, because of their kindness in giving us this body and this life. Yeah. So taking care of our parents, you know, and helping them is more virtuous than just doing it in relationship to somebody else. And on the other hand, lying to our parents and getting mad at them is also heavier non-virtue. Okay. Another group that is a strong group of recipients can be the impoverished and the ill, you know, because of their suffering. So helping them create stronger virtue, you know, like giving a donation to help somebody who's sick is going to be stronger virtue than giving your best friend a present. Okay? Because probably you're giving your best friend a present out of attachment, and, you know, whereas you're helping somebody who's sick or whatever out of a, you know, a really earnest... They have great need, and we're having a motivation that corresponds to that. Okay, the support, so the recipient, so this is sometimes called the basis or the field, so that's the action the action is done towards. The support is the person doing the action. Okay? So that's us, you know, doing the action. So non-virtuous actions are lighter for wise people, okay, who regret their actions, restrain themselves from doing it again, and don't conceal. Okay? So in one way, when you think of it, if you, let's say, are a monastic and you have precepts not to do something, in one way, to overcome your precept and to do a negative action is going to take more energy than for an ordinary person to do it. On the other hand, if you're a monastic with any sense, you will know that you need to purify, yeah, and you'll do that purification. You'll have regret. You won't conceal what you did, and you'll restrain yourself. And so because of that, that non-virtuous action becomes lighter. Okay? So non-virtuous actions are weighty for the ignorant who don't do any purification, and yet who consciously do non-virtuous actions. Okay? Then what they call the nature, or sometimes it's called the object, I think nature is a better translation, is talking about the action itself, yeah? So here, for example, sharing the Dharma with somebody is superior than sharing material things. Yeah, in fact, they say the highest Dharma, giving the Dharma is the highest gift, okay? Offering our practice is superior to material offerings. Yeah. So when they talk about the way to you know, create merit with respect to your spiritual mentor, offering material, offering service, offering your practice. Offering practice is the superior one, where you really put into practice what you're learning. Okay. That doesn't mean you don't do the other two, but if, you know, if you don't have a lot of material things or you can't offer service, it's really your practice that counts. Okay. And then in terms of the nature, we just discussed the order in which the three physical, four verbal and three mental ones, the order of the heavy to light, we discussed that already. Okay, and then the fourth quality is the attitude or the motivation. So if we're, our focus is on, you know, happiness, I'm doing this action to have the happiness of this life, or because I want a good rebirth, or I want liberation, or I want to become a Buddha, then according to our motivation, an action is going to be heavier or lighter. It's also going to be heavier or lighter in terms of whether we're doing it for our own benefit or for the benefit of others. And also heavier or lighter due to the strength, the intensity of our motivation, and the length of time we really hold that motivation. Those are other factors that make an action heavy or light. Okay, so for an example of non-virtue, if you want to have all the heavy non-virtues, okay, killing would be the action, yeah. Somebody who thinks killing is good, so the support is somebody very ignorant. Killing their spiritual mentor, or the Buddha, or their parents, or somebody like this. And really, like, having incredible anger when they're doing it, and just, you know, relishing doing that action. That would be very, very heavy in terms of all four of these factors that make something heavy. Okay? What would be an example of a virtuous action with these four factors being very heavy?
Protecting the life of your spiritual teacher, or a Dharma friend, or a poor person, or your parents, saving them from some sort of harm or danger.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing it out of love and concern for them, and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it for the long-term benefit of themselves, first of all, and then second.
Yeah. And also I would say sharing the Dharma would be one of those two. Because sharing the Dharma is much more virtuous by nature than even protecting life. Mm. Yeah. That may initially sound funny, but if you think that sharing, when you share the Dharma, you teach people about karma, which enables them to stop creating the cause for their own suffering. So then they don't wind up, you know, being in danger so much and so on. Okay? Okay. Questions? Yeah?
Somebody who stutters, what action do you think that provoked that disease? Or
somebody who stutters? I have no idea. Yeah? I don't know. Yeah? It might have to do with lying, or, you know, not being able to get something out. I don't really know. They say that a lot, that karma is the most subtle topic, and only the Buddha knows all these kinds of details. Okay? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. So most of the completing karmas are karmas that do not have all four parts intact?
Yeah, most of the completing karmas. Or completing karmas could be you have all four parts, but it's not a strong action. Yeah.
So for someone like Karuna, who has such a horrible rebirth, that came from a particular series of negativities, but all of the virtuous things that have happened simultaneously could have come from totally different lifetimes, totally different
experience,
exactly. Limitless time. And
exactly.
Just kinda...
We have beginningless lives. So Karuna's being born as a cat due to keeping bad ethical conduct could be in one lifetime. Mm-hmm. But in another lifetime, maybe she was a great philanthropist and so created the cause to have such a cushy life now. Because mm-hmm. you think, I mean, we've had beginningless lifetimes. Who knows what we've done?
And so the importance of dedicating protects those virtues so that they don't ripen like this.
Yeah. The, or the not if it's something virtue,
like the
virtuous, okay, a virtuous action is never going to ripen as it being reborn as a cat.
No, but I mean the completing, to be the, in a situation.
Yeah. You dedicate, if we dedicate, you know, we are protecting the karma from being destroyed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're not necessarily protecting it from ripening now. Because it is nice that the cat has a very comfortable rebirth. You know, when you go to India and you see how much the animals suffer there, you wish they all had, you know, good completing karma. But the dedication prevents the karma, you know, inhibits the karma from getting destroyed.
But if she had dedicated to awakening, this would be the end of that.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. If she, you know, if she, it, let's say Karuna in a previous life was a Dharma practitioner who was very generous. Yeah. She dedicated to full awakening. Yeah. But also in a life before that, she was, you know, she stole from a lot of people and was really obnoxious. So the rebirth as a cat is from being obnoxious and stealing. Yeah. She may have dedicated her virtue for full awakening. It will ripen in that, but while she's a cat, she has a comfortable life. Or she may have just dedicated, may I always have comfortable lives. She may not have even dedicated for full awakening, but she may have been a philanthropist and said, may I always, you know, sleep on the best blankets around. Yeah.
So becoming a monastic and dedicating one's life to practicing the path, is that considered an offering to the three jewels?
Okay, so becoming a monastic and dedicating your life to practicing the path, is that considered an offering to the three jewels? Yeah, it could be, because you're offering, if you practice well, whatever you practice as a monastic, or whatever you practice as a layperson, you offer your practice. Yeah? And so that is an offering to the three jewels. Doesn't matter, monastic or lay. Yeah. So monastic, you keep more precepts, so it's you have more time.
Can an animal be a bodhisattva?
Can it? I think it's better to say a bodhisattva can be an animal, okay? Or a bodhisattva can appear as an animal, okay?
Does it mean anything if you really like rocky, barren places?
Or if you like the desert.
So does it mean anything if you love rocky, barren places? It means you like rocky, barren places. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people living in Arizona.
But if you experience that as a positive thing, it's not a negative karma, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's not a negative karma ripening if you experience that as a nice environment.
How do we keep creating
the causes to learn the right view of emptiness and to realize it? This life, study the right view of emptiness, contemplate it, think about it. That's how you do it. Yeah. Yeah. It's not by going to the disco that you're going to learn the right view of emptiness. And it's not just by praying, please may I, realize emptiness, but meanwhile feeding your mind with cartoon books or something. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I did want to comment that after looking at the results, as far as the environmental and the causally concordant, in the course of any given day, if you look at it through the eyes of karma, these things are ripening all the time. The mm-hmm. way that people relate to you, sometimes mm-hmm. you hear divisive speech, sometimes you're upset stomach, sometimes the weather is trashy. I mean, the whole day long you can see this stuff just ripening.
Exactly. These completing karmas are ripening all day long. Different completing karmas are ripening. If we look, because in one day we experience so many different things, don't we? Yeah, so it's all the ripening of previously created karma.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so that also if you face continuously some circumstances where, example, harsh speech from others or something, then it's also an indicator where I am at, what is my potential, or what is my focus to practice on, maybe, because where do I have a lot of negative karma?
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying, like, if I constantly hear a lot of harsh speech, mm-hmm. maybe it's telling me that I need to focus on my harsh speech so that I don't continually create the karma to hear this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you read a book like Wheel of Sharp Weapons, it's really emphasizing that. Yeah. Okay, any more questions? Online people have no questions. Maybe they're afraid of me.
I have no question, but I wanted to share something. I know that Hitler, he was totally afraid in regard to murders, that we have fatal paranoia, get scared for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't eat food without having somebody before him testing the food for himself. He was totally paranoid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that you can see, it fits very in. She's saying like Hitler was very paranoid and couldn't eat any food unless somebody else tasted. But it fits in so well with his actions. When you're harming others, you have every reason to believe that somebody's going to try and, stop you. Mm-hmm.
How do you know if it's your own karma ripening or the ripening karma of others?
Because your karma ripens on you. How do you know it's your karma ripening and not other people's karma ripening? Because your karma ripens in your happiness and suffering. Other people's karma ripens in their happiness and suffering. We do not experience the result of other people's karma, and they do not experience the result of our karma. Okay? We all experience the result of our own karma.
She kind of puts a total termination of blaming.
Yeah, you can't blame anybody. When you really believe in karma, forget about blaming other people. So somebody may say, but if I'm in a family and, my parent does illegal actions and gets arrested and I'm a child and I suffer because of that, then am I experiencing the result of my parents' karma? No. Yeah, your parents did that action. They're experiencing the result. You're experiencing the result of being a child whose parents are now in prison. But that karma to be that child, at that moment was created by you, not by your parents. Okay?
The repelling karma, is that karma that is happening once we start dying? Is that the time?
The propelling karma is, the karma that ripens during the death process. Yeah, that's going to throw us into the next rebirth. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why it's good to create as much virtue as we can and to train our mind to have positive mental states. So at the time of death, we can, take refuge or think about bodhicitta, because that will help some good karma ripen. But we have to have the good karmic actions, and created the good karmic actions, to have something like that ripen at the time of death, too. So.
It still seems like a roll of the dice sometimes. I mean, that's what I've been kind of thinking about this week through the teachings. It's like there's so many zillions and zillions and zillions of little karmic seeds there that, you know, anything can happen until you get in a situation where you're more clear about the conditions that you put yourself in. You're just
yeah,
a total roll of the dice.
Yeah. It's not really a roll of dice, you know. But, you know, because roll of dice applies causeless, yeah. But, you know, when you aren't aware of what situations you put yourself in, when you don't have a well-formed ethical beliefs, when you don't think about who your friends are and who you're hanging out with and what you're doing, then you just follow whatever idea comes in your mind, and oh, this sounds good, you do that, this sounds good, you do that. And then you wind up creating karma in those situations, and you wind up providing the condition for other karmas to ripen in those situations. Whereas, you know, when you learn about karma and you become more intentional in your life, then, you know, you don't put yourself so often in situations where negative karma can ripen, and in the meantime, you do a lot of purification that will stop it from ripening. Okay?
It seems to me that the mental habits that we're creating, I guess I find that because we wake up every morning with making these motivations,
mm-hmm.
that it seems like it's there even before I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I have some sense that when you're dying, that's something that you really habituated yourself to. Like when Mary Grace had that surgery, and she did the Medicine Buddha Mantra going into this brain surgery, and she came out of it doing the Medicine Buddha Mantra. So
yeah.
It carried through.
Yeah.
It seems to me like...
Yeah, that's why they say before we go to sleep at night, try and generate a positive intention, you know? And you can see, if you go to bed angry, you usually wake up angry and in a bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So to try and go to bed with a good mental state. Okay, let's dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiryatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Ashravasti Abbey in the west floor.